Well, my first question is that you've been in the adult film industry for almost 4 decades now, and
Yes, I started in 1971.
And I just from what I've read, not having been alive that long, but it seems as if the it's undergone tremendous changes during that time period, from going a quasi-mainstream to film to videotape, and then the effect of AIDS and then the internet. And I was wondering if you could summarize for us what you think the biggest changes have been and the changes that you've personally seen.
Well, when I came into the adult industry, it was, of course, I guess you might call it underground. And I got here about the time it became sociologically acceptable with Deep Throat and Green Door. And it began to move from the underground into the mainstream, and people would go to see X-rated films. They called them porno chic. I guess that's a, trite the true term. That it was the thing to do back in the mid-70s to go see an adult movie. It was no longer a stigma to see an adult movie. So that's the first thing that jump-started Triple X into, well, it made X an equal letter in the entertainment alphabet. I guess that's the best way to put it. And film was the only way, of course. You went to a theater. There were no other technological ways of getting this. Before that, of course, there'd been the stag films, there'd been the, they call them blue movies, stuff washed in garages. But now you were going to mainstream theaters, or at least big theaters, in New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and there was a lot less shame attached to seeing adult movies. And that alone gave us the jump start we needed to come into the mainstream, so to speak. It's interesting that from almost the beginning, the industry wanted respectability, but it's its own worst enemy because it fights against respectability by refusing to, sort of, I say, play the game. But we'll get to that. I want things like raising the age of 21. I want intravenous drug testing. I want, most importantly, I want something called the porn tax, because alcohol, tobacco, and gambling all have the sociological respectability of all those psychic species of being left alone because they're taxed. And my industry resists the tax, which doesn't make any sense, but it has a lot to do with the lawyers and their, insanity to keep, well, their greed to keep this industry, keep it in trouble, and so they can feed off the misery of their clients. And I don't particularly like lawyers. In fact, I don't particularly like the establishment of my business. I never really have. I've never really been in it for the economic gain. I've been in it for the glory, certainly not the sex, which is unbelievably mechanical. And I've done my, 500 sex scenes and 300 movies. But from the beginning, I realized I was coming into something. I was fortunate to be here right at the beginning, and I began to take note of what was going on. And to that extent, I've been able to become, I guess, by sheer attrition, the historian of the industry. With the death of Holiday, my cosmic brother, I've assumed that role, and I do the best I can to preserve the facts as best as I can get them. Of course, I editorialize because maybe I add more to it. But from the theaters in the 70s, they suddenly realized, and the industry has always been at the forefront of the technological movements, they realized that there was life after film, and video came along. And of course, with video, which I have an awful lot of my videos here at home that I call my baseball cards, I'm very proud of my videos. Some of them aren't even very good, but I'm proud of the fact I got them in their boxes, and that's really sort of cool. I get a big kick out of them because, people come in my house and they see two shelves full of tapes and they say, "Are those all yours?" And I say, "Yeah, they're mine. I'm proud of them." And, I just get a big kick out of having what I've done. It's really sort of cool, and I guess this is the reason I did it, to have all this stuff. And I just finished a major project, a thing called We Are the World Triple X, which is one of the proudest moments of my life, and it validates the term the family of X, which is one of my favorite coined terms. This is a family. You have to, let's go from film to video, from video to DVD, and now, of course, as I'm talking to you, I'm on my computer. So the tragedy of it, and I've said this many times, is I've gone from being an Eiffel Tower down to a toothpick. Once upon a time, I could see myself on a screen. Now I can see myself on a computer. And I never really wanted to be Dominionized in my own lifetime. I never wanted to be... I used to be a Gulliver, and now I'm a Lilliputian. And that's not much fun, because I've been Dominionized in my own lifetime by technology. And if I don't know if you've ever seen yourself on the screen, but to walk into a theater and see yourself up on the screen is an unbelievable experience. Now I can turn on a computer and see one of my scenes, and I, oh my God, you know, I don't want to be that small. But I'm trapped by technology in that situation. So technology has made it more, well, that's, I think technology is both our best and worst value, because it's made it so easy to watch us that tragically, as we head toward our fourth decade, 40-year anniversary would be 2012, I guess. I consider 72 the watershed moment in that respect. We're too easy to get to now. It's not as hard to go to us. You don't have to go out of your way to get to my business. It almost literally falls into your lap. Turn on your computer, and that somewhat takes the fun out of it, I would think. If it's too easy, you don't care about it anymore. Because it's made it so easy to watch us that tragically, as we head toward our fourth decade, 40-year anniversary would be 2012, I guess. I consider 72 the watershed moment in that respect.
For the viewer, switching from the large screen of the theater now to the very small screen of the computer, do you think that makes it go from seeming kind of larger than life to something very mundane and ordinary?
Well, I'd hate to say mundane or ordinary. It's still giving you what you want, which is a masturbatory catharsis for the masses, but it's just the ease of getting to it. Before, you had to get dressed, go out, find the theater, go into the theater, perhaps be a little bit uncomfortable as you unlock the zipper of your mind as you were watching something. Perhaps if you wanted to play with yourself during that, you had to look over your shoulder to see if somebody was watching you play with yourself, which I don't begrudge. That's, you know, you're welcome to play with your own masturbation. Come on, kid. But now you get the privacy of your home, and somewhat private of your home, because usually I don't believe people watch our stuff with the sound on, because their neighbors might know.
Right.
So an awful lot of what I've ever said probably is disappearing into the cosmos because they don't watch it with sound. You don't really need to listen to a lot of these. You never really did, quite frankly, but it's a visual medium, and it gives you what you want. We have our superstars, our legends, which we'll talk about later on, but we have a lot of, we've created history. I think that's the thing that I realize more than anything else. We've created history. And very, very importantly, we have, from John Holmes and Linda Lovelace and Marilyn Chambers through Seika and Amber Lynn and Ginger Lynn and Christy Canyon, into, of course, the last name brand adult performer of all time, Jenna Jameson, we've created names that are household names, even if perhaps your household is an outhouse. But we still have created names. And these are names to be reckoned with in the mainstream entertainment market.
I was reading an interview around the time that Deep Throat came out with Gerard Damiano. And it was with Roger Ebert. And he was saying that he didn't think, this was in the 70s, he was saying that he didn't think the adult film would survive as a distinct genre very long, because he thought that Hollywood would kind of swallow up the hardcore sex aspects into mainstream filmmaking. Why do you think that hasn't happened? Why do you think that it remains its own distinct world almost to this day?
I think that society in general is still a little bit frustrated, guilt-ridden, and ignorant when it comes to human sexuality, and we're not as willing to accept that. But as society's eyes open wider and wider and more acceptance comes in, I still believe that we will be absorbed. It's just taking a lot longer, maybe because you have a lot of puritanical people out there, and I've said this many times, we live in a nation of hypocrites who jack off to us with their left hand and deny us with their right. So every one of these people in the mainstream who would like to absorb us is also denying us at the same time. They don't want to admit that. They admit that they want to absorb us, but they nibble at the periphery. They use our people in tangential roles. They take our people out of X and put them in R-rated films. I think they delude our people, because every time one of my kids makes it into a mainstream movie, they think that they don't have to go back into X, but we're used as oddities. We're sort of a pet rock or a hula hoop a mood ring, and then were tossed back into X because they really still don't know how to handle us. We're simply entertainers. We happen to do a little bit more than other entertainers, but we are entertainers, and we have some remarkably talented people who deserve the break, I guess. Although, quite frankly, I don't want that break. I like it where I'm at, and I don't hanker for real-world acceptance. I still want to be, as I said, and upsets my business. A lot of things I say upset my business. I prefer it in the gutter, where I can look up the skirt of society rather than be on the sidewalk and look down their blouse. I really don't want to be treated as just somebody on their level. I want still to have people come to me, much like you, and ask me about what I know rather than just be accepted into the mainstream. So I'm still on the outside looking in, and I like it there. And to me, the five most important letters of my life are R-E-B-E-L. I do it because of the outlaw mentality. And of course, we need to discuss a very important factor here, that with the exception of California, every other state in the union, it's illegal to make adult movies. But nobody seems to care anymore. In California, we were given our legitimacy with a statement called the Freeman Decision, interestingly, which allowed us to go from being prostitutes and the people who paid us panderers to performers, and the people who paid us became producers. I'm not sure you were aware of that.
No, I was not.
And a lot of your listeners probably aren't aware of it either. If you saw a movie called Boogie Nights, it got it all wrong about that time because it never mentioned we were illegal. And that's sort of sad because I think the movie would have been a lot better had you had the conflict between the law and the people running around in Boogie Nights. The Burt Reynolds character is somewhat based on most of my early life in the business because I coined the term Family of X. I am known as Papa Bear, and I watch over the cubs in the Tree of X. Now, I have some cubs who crawl down from their tree and create their own tree, the great cubs such as a Portia Lynn or a Nina Hartley, or recently Amber Lynn, who pulled off a remarkable event by masterminding a film made completely out of volunteers. I don't know if you keep up with the internet stories, but we put together We Are the World XXX, and Amber masterminded it, and no one was paid, and this is to raise money for one of the great directors in the history of this business who has fallen upon very hard physical times. He's dying, and we're trying to make his going as easy as possible. So these are my great, great, great cubs who've made up their own trees, and they have their own, but they still come back to me. You know, I do run an organization, maybe you don't know, Protecting Adult Welfare, PAW Foundation, and that's to watch over the somewhat fragile mental stability of the adult performer. We haven't discussed disease yet because it's a major, we're aware of it and we're handling it, and it's not as frightening as people seem to think. We've suffered a lot of ups and downs in this business. We've had our big age problem with Tracy Lords. We survived that bit by bit by bit over the last, I've been in it 36, 37 years. We've grown up in increments. We become more and more aware of the responsibilities that we have. See, personally, and this has very little to do with anything that we talk about, but I prefer to remain 12 years old. I call the X-rated industry the playpen of the damned, overage version of juvenile hall, which leads to part of my background. I was probation officer in juvenile hall. I lived there when I was 12 years old. And this is an overage version of juvenile hall, where recess is 24 hours a day, and the bell of responsibility never rings. Now, with Tracy Lord's responsibility bell rang, so now we pay more attention to the age of people coming in, and that's the reason I want to raise the age to 21. With the HIV outbreak of 1998, we paid a great deal of attention now to the medical end of things, and that's why I also want to add intravenous drug testing to the business. So bit by bit, we have to learn to play by a semblance of rules. I don't like the word rules, but since they're there, we have to live within them or play by them in order to survive.
Well, that was one reason. I think you're in a unique position because whether the stereotype of someone who works in your industry is right or not, you're definitely very different than the stereotype. And it's obvious that you have a great concern and compassion for your peers and your colleagues. Could you give us some information? I've read about the causes that you mentioned, but my listeners probably don't know about them. Could you give us some information on how to get more information if people want to contribute or find out more?
Well, which one do you want to contribute to? I would like right now, Protecting Adult Welfare is a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was created, it was jump-started when Savannah killed herself in 1994. But years before that, with my background in working with people, I've been always sort of watching over the performers, and this is the family of X. If a person wants to donate money to Protecting Adult Welfare or donate money specifically for Henri Pichard, Ron Sullivan, hopefully your listeners know who he is. He's made some awful good movies in this business, like American Taboo and She's So Fine and The Devil and Miss Jones Part 2. This man is a world-class director of adult entertainment, and he needs some help right now. He's probably going to die before he gets the help, but maybe this will help his family. He came to the set on last Wednesday, and in one of the great moments in the history of this business, the people all came and surrounded him and hugged him, and it was remarkable. It was, again, it validates the family of X, which means more to me than anything else, because this is our family. We're basically, once you choose the lifestyle of being an adult performer, it's going to be with you the rest of your life. It's not going to go away when you leave, because the images are forever. I warn people that once they do this, it's immortal. It's eternity. And you better be willing to accept that, because 10 years from now, it can come back and bite you in the ass when you least expect it. And it's better, as I refer to the people who I want to come into this business, if people are really interested in coming into it, and I try and talk them out of it. I ran the biggest agency in the world from 1973 to 1982 in Hollywood, across from the Chinese Theater, and I basically talked 90% of the people who came into it away from it. Once you do this, it doesn't go away. So if you sell me your soul, I will make you immortal. And the best person for me, and it's a little cruel when I say it, is a sterile orphan. Person who can't have kids and a person who doesn't have any family, and they're adopted into the family of X. A lot of adult performers, and I say this for personal reference, are lonely people in a crowd. We're basically very lonely because we're scared of relationships, because we don't really trust anybody way down deep. We believe that we're having relationships because of who we are, not the humanity factor, more of the humping factor. Not so much in the male, but the female is very frightened of relationships in this business, because, in fact, the female, I've always believed, uses sex as a way of avoiding the relationship. But if somebody in your crowd, your listening audience, wants to donate to Protecting Adult Welfare, they can get in contact with me through the BMargold, B-M-A-R-G-O-L-D at AOL.com, or they can directly send money if they want to, and you know, they don't have to, they can send their concern, that's good enough for me, to the PAW Foundation, P-A-W Foundation, at 17400 Marilla, M-A-R-I-L-L-A, Street, Northridge, N-O-R-T-H-R-I-D-G-E, California, 91325. Or again, they could also call Protecting Adult Welfare, and I love to talk to people about the industry, at 818-501-6139 and ask whatever they like. I love answering questions. I'm involved now with Swank Magazine doing a series, and it is the most fun I've ever had, because I'm writing a series called Those Were the Lays, which is my life in the X-rated industry, and eventually it'll become a book, hopefully called Playpen of the Damned, which is what I call this business, because we are damned, like I said, by the society that jacks off to us with one hand, denies us with the other. And I've written 23 chapters of 2,000 word or more chapters. I'm only up to September of 1978 in my career. So I obviously, you can see how much longer I have to go. I have another 30 years to deal with. But, and I have so many things to say and so many things that I've been fortunate enough to do. I am very, very, very lucky to have been in the right place at the right time, with almost every watershed moment or sociological change or technological change. I was involved in the very first videos on video. I was involved in 3D movies. I was involved in most of the, well, I wrote the movie that the Freeman Decision is based on, an anal thing called Caught from Behind. I've just been very, very lucky. And I guess, you know, my greatest of all my quotes, the one I said to the Meats Commission in 1985, we're in a society that is drug-infested, violence-racked, and polluted by chemical greed. No one has ever died from an overdose of pornography. And I'll follow that up with another quote, and that's all I'll say about religion, is that if the censors get rid of God damn, they'll get rid of God next.
Mm.
So this is what I deal in. I try and speak in as many sound bites as possible. My background is journalism. I started as a journalist in this business. I would like to have a radio show. And in fact, I do radio once a month now on Playboy. I do a show I've created called Historex, HISTORXXX, where people call in and ask about their favorite people from the past. And it's a wonderful show, and it's tragically only an hour, and it goes in 10 minutes, basically, where I get to talk about the people who have come and gone in this business, or some of who have stayed. And interestingly enough, on 8/8/8 of this year, obviously, we're having the world premiere of a book about John Holmes, the most important person in the history of this business. And I've given it, its title is A Life Measured in Inches. And I wrote the foreword to it, referring to it as hardcore. So I gave him the hardcore martyr mentality. And the image I paint is that every sociological movement has had a sacrificial lamb, so to speak. And what is an X but a twisted cross?
Mm. I wanted to ask you about John Holmes and Linda Lovelace. They, when you read their stories, they both seem to be, on the whole, incredibly sad.
Well, there's not a lot, you know. Sad. It's true. It's true because, again, it's based on the factor of lonely in a crowd. The pressure of fame, the pressure of public adulation, is omnipresent. When you're up on top of a mountain, everybody can see you. When you're up on top of a mountain without your clothes, even more people can see you. And I think that the pressure of that kind of infamy, famous infamy, twisted fame, can destroy you. Because you're so frightened that you're not going to be able to maintain that position. Holmes, of course, was honored or, you know, revered because of something between his legs, not even because of who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the life measured in inches. Lovelace was revered because of something she could do at a time when we were just coming out of we were climbing out of the underground with Deep Throat. And, of course, the oral fantasy, because I believe you can go home and get laid, but you can't go home and get blown. So that whole male fixation on oral sex. Those were the two who started it off. Now Chambers figures into it with Green Door.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the three who led us out of the Dark Ages. And two of them now are dead. Holmes and Lovelace, tragically, both of them I had to induct into the Legends of Erotica, an official Hall of Fame in Las Vegas, posthumously. Chambers, I was fortunate enough to be able to induct while she's still alive and very special human being. I have a Hall of Fame. I created a Hall of Fame with a friend of mine named Raymond Pistol at Showgirl Video. There's another museum opening up now in Las Vegas, which I've been invited to attend, the Erotic Heritage Museum, and I'm hoping that I can become sort of its historical curator and make sure that they get it right. Another of my great lines, and it's one I think I live by more than anything else, there is no future if in the present we fail to pay homage to the past. Very, 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 very important that you understand that the past creates the present into the future. And you have to go back and honor on a regular basis the people who were here before us.
Well, you talked about the Meese Commission.
Yeah.
It seems as if there's a renewed interest in prosecuting obscenity that's just recently come back up. Do you see that, or is that
just an election year?
Yeah.
It's a cheap thrill. However, and I was hoping you would talk about that, you see here on top of the news, you're talking about the Max Hardcore case, I would guess.
Yes.
Okay. Well, And this is the first time I've been interviewed about the Max Hardcore case, where it's going to get out into the public. I'm going to simply say that Max got exactly what he deserved.
Okay.
And people are going to, you know, say, how dare you turn against your own? Well, Max knew what he was doing going in, and I warned Max very early on that as we continue to move toward public acceptance, there will be sacrificial lambs along the way. Not martyrs, because Max is not worth the price of a nails, hammer, and a cross.
Mm-hmm.
But Max would like to think that he's protected by the First Amendment. I have an awful lot of cowards in my business who hide behind the First Amendment, hide behind the American flag. Quite honestly, I'm proud to say that I would stand in front of the American flag, and I'd stand in front of the First Amendment to protect it, and I would be happy, well, I wouldn't be happy, but I'd certainly be proud to die for this business, because I believe in it. I believe that it is a masturbatory catharsis for the masses. I've never seen an adult video, by the way, jump down off a shelf, run down the street, drag somebody home, and make them watch it. And that's one of Max's marginal defenses. But a lot of what everyone says comes from what I originally have said. Viper, who we haven't spoken about yet, and I'm glad I get a chance to mention her, my great love, once said, when asked why she made X-rated films, she did it so she could have sex with 10,000 men at a time rather than one.
Mm.
And the interviewer said that's the greatest answer he'd ever heard. I always say that I do it so I can have sex for 10,000 men rather than one. But I also knew going into this business, because we were looked upon with a slight jaundiced eye, that what we were doing tends to offend some people, although they continue to look, and then they don't admit that they look, and then they try and go after us. So if you're going to stick your neck out, you can expect to get your head cut off occasionally. Max has gone out of his way. If you've watched any of his stuff, it's... And I'll tell you that I did stuff in the 70s when we were patently illegal, when we were in our growing years. I did stuff that was pretty violent. And at points in time, you might say degrading to whoever I was working with, although they were consenting adults. There are some pretty interesting scenes in my early career that I did because I knew we were illegal, so I could do whatever I wanted. And of course, I refer to them as unlocking the zipper of the mind. But I've never really, really hurt anybody. And it's not the physical damage that is done to somebody when somebody like Max Hardcore works with you. It's what I refer to as the mental damage. And I refer to it in a term that, this is the first time I'm getting to say this in on a show. I refer to it as cinematic incest.
Mm.
Although the people are overage, it's still within the family of X. And they come into the family of X trusting the people they're going to work with, and they're broken in half. Their mental spirit is shattered. And I speak from personal experience because there's an incident, and this is the first time I've ever said this on a show, and this is serving Max right, because one of his performers came into my office, which is the PAW Foundation office, and it's there's absolutely nothing sexual in that office. It's loaded with teddy bears, because the teddy bear is the very first thing that you ever spoke to or ever confided in as a child. And the person got down on her knees and put her head on my knee and began to cry. And, of course, that upsets me when my kids cry, so I tried to comfort her. And then Max, who has his office across from me in a building 4523 Van Nuys Boulevard, or at least at that time did have his office across from me, came into my office, snapped his fingers and said, "Get out of this office," to her. And I said, "You don't do that with one of my kids." He said, "Fuck you. You don't have any kids. What the hell? You know, I'll do whatever I want." I said, "And one day society will act out against you," mm-hmm. which is what you want anyway, because it'll give you the notoriety you're so desperate for. But from then on, I've always warned him that eventually the time would come when he would offend somebody's delicate sensibilities. And what's happening down in Tampa now, although I believe that he will not spend any time in jail, I believe that he'll spend an awful lot of money, because that's the way the government gets us. They drain us dry economically. And, of course, it works both ways, because the lawyers who feed off of him want to keep him just in enough trouble to keep him spending money. And when he's out of money, then, of course, they'll abandon him. But I think that Max, who pretends to be some kind of hero, will eventually make a plea bargain and will simply go away. There's another one out there named Rob Black. There are other companies out there that have been through certain amounts of legal haranguing, and there may be some more. It's interesting that you mention all of these problems. One of the great people who I refer to as a genius, John Stagliano, Buttman, who I basically discovered, and is the only person that I do refer to as a genius, and in fact volunteered his directorial nuances to this project, We Are the World, last week, has also been indicted on various obscenity charges. But I think he'll have he has a better chance of getting off based on who he is and his reputation. Max has no this was inevitable. And I'm not clicking my heels in glee. It's a chink in the armor, or chink in the armor, because once they get in, they can go after other people. But I don't think they're going to do that as much as everybody else says. I think people are crying wolf way too much. And if you were to go around the adult entertainment industry and ask, but not get names, and take a poll, I would venture to say that anyone aware of what Max has been up to for all these years, minimum 90% of this business is probably looking in the mirror and grinning. Because not that they're going to be perhaps next, but Max flaunted his venom. He spewed it into the face of the industry and into the face of society. And after a while, if you're pissed on him long enough, you're going to piss back. So this is the first, and I've been looking forward to somebody asking me this, and I'm not ashamed of what I'm not the hell with what people think about what I say, because 90% or 99% of what I've said and predicted in this business has come true. And if I wasn't prescient, if I wasn't fairly accurate in what I believe, I wouldn't be here and you wouldn't be calling me. I have definitely substantiated my position in this business. So, again, I feel absolutely no sorrow whatsoever for what's happening to Max down in Tampa. And his, you know, statements about, I'm going to hold my head high as I go to jail, he'll hold it as high as he can till it's shoved into a toilet. They're not going to, see, the thing is, Max is not going to be a hero in jail. Holmes, to a certain extent, when he went to jail, was a marginal hero, although he became a victim of his own fame because people want to see that thing. I believe that Holmes, the seeds for his eventual demise were planted while he was in jail, not through what you believe, which is anal rape, but I think Holmes became a victim of something called institutionalized constipation. And again, I don't get to talk about this very much, but you seem to be a fairly avant-garde show. With a name like Andrew Octopus, you gotta be. So one of your tentacles is going to now get spoken to, in that I don't, and I'll talk straight to your listeners in this respect, and I'm going to ask every one of them, man is the only animal in the world who has a door on his restroom. The only animal. Your dog will crap in front of you and smile. Your cat will make a big deal out of going to the bathroom and make as much noise as possible in front of you. You know, go over and dig on that sandbox that gets to China. But man has always been taught that defecating is a private act. Now, urination, while we're doing this interview, you can probably stand up and piss in your bathroom and, you know, take the phone with you proudly. And I do the same thing. But when you defecate, you want some privacy. And guess what? In jail, there is none. So I believe what happens to people in jail is that they become institutionally constipated. Subconsciously, they deny the urge to defecate, and the poisons begin to build up in their body. Now, no one's ever going to do a study of this, but you certainly are welcome to, and you might wind up winning a Nobel Prize. In that, I'd like somebody to check convicts who have been in jail for a long period of time. When they come out, I believe that they've contracted or have the incipient rudimentary level of a colon cancer. No one's ever thought of this. Well,
it makes sense.
Firstly, obviously you have a door on your bathroom at home, right?
Right.
And when you go to that bathroom, 90% of the time, I bet you close your door.
Yes.
Okay, why?
Because
think about it.
Yeah.
Because you want the privacy of defecation. So I believe that while Holmes was in jail, that was the beginning of the end. Now, I also believe while he was in jail, because of what happened up on Wonderland and his refusal to testify, which, you know, he didn't, he would might have been dead if had he testified because of what he knew. He was also, when you go to jail, and I speak from the experience, having been in juvenile hall and been in jail a couple of times for working in the adult entertainment business, they give you all kinds of tests, and they take blood and all that bullshit. Well, I think if they take something, they might put something back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he was given a very low grade of the HIV virus, which took years to fester in his system and finally wound up, among many other things, claiming him. See, I have my own feeling about HIV. We mm-hmm. haven't discussed it yet, but I believe that it was a genetically bred form of eugenics that was created by a number of governments in the 1950s, desirous of ridding the world of three factions that were deemed unnecessary or extraneous because we were overpopulated, and we're still overpopulated. Mm-hmm. And this is a failed plague, by the way. It hasn't done the job. The HIV virus was aimed at minorities, intravenous drug users, and homosexuals. Three extraneous factors in the eyes of the eugenic breeding doctors of that time. It's interesting that when Holmes died in March of 1988, I received a phone call, and it was very simple. Holiday called me and told me that the king was dead. And at that point, I was living with Viper, who I love to talk about because she was the greatest person I've ever known in my life. She peeked over her book, the famous cat sitting on her lap, Pogo. She was reading as usual and said, "My father worked with genetics in Tennessee in the 50s.
Hmm.
And then she went back to reading. And I think that tells you something.
Hmm.
Holmes was sacrificed, and again, like I said, hardcore martyr, but it didn't scare the industry in any way, shape, or form because they almost expected him to go because he was being punished for what may or may not have happened up on Wonderland and all of his other problems that he had. We didn't have another problem in our business for 10 more years. And then we had a series of outbreaks, all of which I believe are related to intravenous drug use.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had another series of outbreaks in 2004, but altogether, we only can figure 17 cases at this point of heterosexual HIV in this business. Out of all the sex themes, of all the involvements, of all the opportunities to get the dreaded disease, 17 cases heterosexually. So it's just not, it's a failed plague. And to worry your listeners a great deal, the next one's going to come in the form of water and will wipe out probably half the population of the world. And it'll be much more indiscriminate. This plague was aimed at areas and it tried to decimate those areas, but now there's medicines that'll keep these people alive forever. It'll turn them into probably mummies or zombies. But it'll fatten them up and preserve them into eternity. So we're aware. AIM does test for HIV and chlamydia and gonorrhea and occasionally syphilis and all of the other things that you can catch from having sex. But what it doesn't test for is overuse of the genitalia, which after a while, you've got to let the damn thing rest or it's going to wear out. And horrible things happen. You can't.